When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's More Money with leading economist Steve Moore.
Stephen Moore is with us, economist.
With more than 30 years' experience as an economist and as a leading thinker of government on business, showing deep understanding of the shifts in the global economy. He's leading economist Steve Moore with More Money on Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's your host, Steve Moore.
Good afternoon, folks. This is the More Money Show. This is WABC Radio, and I am very honored and privileged to have you listening to my show. And I know so many regulars listen every week. We are on from 1 to 2 p.m. every Saturday afternoon on WABC. We're going to have a lot to cover this afternoon, by the way, and I hope that you guys are having a wonderful weekend. But I want to get right down to it. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about what is going on with the presidential race. And that is right now, in my opinion, but basically a toss-up. I think that it could go either way. But I've got to tell you, I think I'm very impressed right now with what is going on with Donald Trump. I'm just impressed with the way he is handling himself. I think he is the good Trump right now. And, you know, there's always been a good Trump and a bad Trump. And I say this as someone who regards Donald Trump as a friend. And I've been honored to serve with him when he was in the White House and on the 2016 campaign and the 2020 campaign right now. And so, I mean, in the 2024 campaign. So very much honored to have been with him. But I have to tell you, having been around him so much, I really believe that he's on his A game right now. No question about it. And he has talking about the issues. He's talking about the economy. He's talking about the border. He's talking about how to fix the schools. All of these things are at the forefront of what Americans care about right now. And it's one of the reasons I feel that he's on a roll. Now, there's a lot of issues that are going to be covered in this election. It's not just about the border. It's not just about the economy. It's not just about our energy policy. It's not just about the fact that things are blowing up all over the world, but I think it's a big part of it. I really do. I think that he is totally focused on how to fix, the problems that are facing America. And look, I know Donald Trump has flaws. I know a lot of times I don't like the way he does some of the name calling, but I will say this about Trump. I really believe that he can do what he did in 2016, which is he inherited a not very good economy under Barack Obama. You all remember that. It was a tough 8 years. And within 2 years, he had fixed the economy and we were booming again. And if it hadn't been for COVID, we'd have been in great shape. But then, then we get Biden and the economy's gone in the tank again. And I'm sorry, I know things have improved a little bit and blah, 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 but this is not a good economy. I mean, anybody who says this is a good economy, I'm not buying it. I just am not buying it. I'm not buying this idea that everything is getting fixed. I mean, if you look at the inflation rate, it's headed back to 5%. Prices of everything, food up 23%, gas up 33%, mortgage rates up 40%. Look at your electric utility bill. People cannot afford the living standard that they had just 3 years ago. So that's going to be a fun one to watch. I want to mention a couple of other quick issues that we're going to be covering this afternoon. And by outstanding guests, I'm so excited. I have John Fund, who you all know as the 20-year political analyst with the Wall Street Journal who worked with me at the Wall Street Journal editorial board. And I'm good friends with him, but I think he's the smartest political mind we've got in America. And then we've got David Malpass coming up too. David Malpass was the president of the World Bank. He knows what's going on in the world economy. He knows what's going on with the Fed. And we're going to talk to him about whether the Fed is doing the right thing. And I think the answer to that is no, but we will get his attitude about that. But a couple of other quick things I wanted to bring to your attention. I am so worried about what is happening with what I call the regulatory octopus in America. Too many of my friends keep using this term, the administrative state. I'm going to start a movement. Stop using the term the administrative state. No, it is the regulatory octopus that is strangling our economy and ripping into some of our greatest industries. And one of those, and this is an issue I want you all to be paying attention to, an agency called the Federal Communications Commission. I don't even know why we have this. It's one of those ABC regulatory agencies that's accountable to no one. They want to re-regulate the internet. I'm going to say that again. They want to re-regulate and basically take over both in terms of the content and the access to the internet. The government is going to take that over. We don't need that. They should take their grubby paws off of the internet. We don't need more government. In fact, one of the things that made the internet and it made America the number one technology country in the world during the internet age was we made a decision 25, 30 years ago to just keep, let it be the Wild West. Let the internet flourish without government regulation, without government lawsuits, without government taxation. And we created trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth. We have six of the seven major internet companies in the world are dominated by the United States. And you may not like some of these companies, but my God, they've created incredible products, whether it's Google, whether it's Apple, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Microsoft. These companies have been amazing and they've made a lot of money and they've created millions of jobs for Americans. So why are we attacking them? Now, what the FCC wants to do, the Federal Communications Commission, is re-regulate this industry in a way that will cause huge problems. I work with some of my friends at a group called Net Choice. And Net Choice basically is saying, you know, let's get the government out of the way of most of our industries, which is what I believe in. That's why I do what I do, because I think the free market is by far the best path to prosperity. And so if you get more of these kinds of interventions, I think you're going to hurt American workers. I think you're going to hurt American shareholders. And by the way, most of you are shareholders. You're investors. That's why you listen to this show, so you can make more money. And it is outrageous. And that by the way, under Trump, we deregulated the internet. We got rid of a lot of these rules and we saw a faster and cheaper and more efficient internet. Now Biden wants to bring back those regulations. And at the same time, we have another rogue agency called the Federal Trade Commission, which is basically trying to stop virtually every single merger and acquisition in our economy. And look, if a company can't take over a smaller company, then you're going to have fewer smaller companies. Startup companies often are started in the hopes that someone will buy them at three or four or five times their value. I know we have a lot of people who listen to this show who started companies that were bought out by another company, and that's part of the free market system. And we have a woman named Lena Khan who runs that agency who's completely out of control. And right now I count 15 different actions that the government is taking to stop mergers and acquisitions, which is a direct assault on the free enterprise system. They've gone after Google. They've gone after Amazon. They've gone after our banks. They're going after. And I think it's so inappropriate. Let the free market work. You guys should all, by the way, check out NetChoice. Those guys are fantastic. They do such great work. So these are the issues that I want to talk about this afternoon on the show. We'll be right back. This is the More Money Show on WABC.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? the federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen Newbridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen Newbridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130. For an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
This is More Money with economist Steve Moore. Now, Steve Moore.
Welcome back, folks. This is the More Money Show. I'm economist Steve Moore. Thanks so much for joining this afternoon and the lovely springtime. And my next guest is a guy I've worked with for, I don't know, several decades now. He was one of the senior political reporters at the Wall Street Journal on the editorial board for many, many years. He is now a political reporter with National Review, and he also works with me as our senior political analyst at the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. And by the way, folks, I sure hope that you are getting our Committee to Unleash Prosperity hotline, which is free. There's no Biden inflation with the hotline because it costs you nothing. All you have to do is go to the Committee to Unleash Prosperity.com website. That's Committee to Unleash Prosperity.com and sign up for the free email that you will get that will make you the smartest person in the room when you talk about the economy and politics. John is one of our key writers of that. So, John, I appreciate you joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
So a lot to cover. I want to start with, if I could, I really would like to ask you about this. And have you been following this story at NPR, John?
Very much so. In fact, it's breaking news right now that the 25-year veteran business editor at NPR has just resigned, saying that the diversity that he expects, the diversity in thought that he expects right. from an organization that calls itself National Public Radio cannot be found with his new boss.
So tell, so for people who aren't paying as close attention to this as you and I do, to give the background of what happened, that guy's name is, Uri Berliner. Yes. And I know him, by the way. He's always been a straight shooter. I mean, he's not a conservative. I don't think he's, you know, maybe even slightly lean left, but they're basically throw him over the boat.
Yes. Now, NPR is an organization that started in the 1970s, 1980s. It has always been liberal, urban, and elitist. However, yes. It did make an attempt to bring different voices and news to America when, frankly, talk radio was a desert. You know, there was a period of time when you know, there wasn't a Rush Limbaugh. The AM band was and the FM band were pretty bad. So yes. NPR was an improvement. However, it has since become an enormously important political vehicle for the left.
Well, by the way, John, just let me interrupt you for a second. It's been like that. You know, when I first came to Washington 40 years ago, we were talking about, wait a minute, why does National Public Radio have to get tax dollars? Even back then, it was pretty left wing, but now it's sort of over the top. And again, I want to make sure I'm framing this issue so people understand what John and I are talking about. Tell people about what he wrote and what really incited this whole revolt.
Well, he basically pointed out that 10 years ago, about a quarter of NPR's listeners were conservative, only 37% were liberal, and the rest were independents or middle of the road. Yeah. Yeah. That is no longer the case. Now it's below 10% conservative, over 50% liberal, and the rest cats and dogs.
You're talking are you talking about the people who work there or the listeners?
The audience.
Okay, but what about the people who work there?
Well, in Washington, what he found is he looked at voter registration records, and of those people who registered by party, 87 were Democrats, 0 were Republicans.
Wait, 0? Not 1?
Yeah, even college campuses usually have a toka.
That is pretty amazing. Why did they? So he wrote about this, right? And he was just...
Well, he not only wrote about that, but he wrote about the fact that this ideological bubble prevented them from covering some of the most important issues.
Like COVID.
They got Russiagate completely wrong. They got the Hunter Biden story completely wrong. In fact, one of the editors at NPR said, we're not going to cover Hunter Biden's story.
because nobody,
the story of his lost computer and all of the damaging material that was on it.
And these are the same people, by the way, who did cover day after day the phony Russia collusion story.
Right. And they also got the Black Lives Matter story wrong. They got COVID wrong.
Right.
He said on every major issue of the last decade, NPR has basically misled its listeners.
And he's right. And okay, so he told the truth, and so then this caused an outcry on both the left and the right from people like you and me. We're like, wow, what's going on there? You would think, John, when a story comes out like that, that they would be embarrassed and they'd say, hey, we're going to take some action to correct this, but that's not what happened.
Well, very few people like self-criticism. Very few people like criticism from others. So it's not surprising that NPR basically circled the wagons and started firing outwards at this editor. They suspended him without pay. They've made life too difficult for him to stay, especially since it turned out that the new, brand new head of NPR, the CEO, Catherine Mayer, has a political activist background that is unbelievable. You wouldn't even find this at ABC, CBS, or NBC. He said in a tweet just before she was hired, our reverence for the truth is a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done.
Oh, my God. So
she went out and called Donald Trump a racist. And then she talked
about it. How did she get that job?
Because she's a left-wing activist.
I mean, but
her first media job.
I know, but how was she selected, though? Was that a Biden appointment?
NPR has a board of directors. By the way, NPR is mostly a private corporation. It is true they get a government subsidies, but about 80% of their money comes from foundations and other income. So
now, hold on. Let me stop you there because this is an important point you're making. So this is WABC radio. I am a free market guy. I'm a conservative. And so, I'm openly in favor of liberty and freedom and free markets. And so we have a slant on this show and people can listen to it. Or if they don't want to listen to it, they can't. We like to take callers with all sorts of different political views. But the difference between like what I'm doing right now with you, John, and what NPR does is this is not taxpayer sponsored. I believe in free speech. You do. People should be able to say what they want on the radio or on TV, but not with my tax dollars.
Well, granted, and NPR used to be more heavily funded by the tax dollars of you and everyone else. However, the problem has been that woke corporations and woke individuals have contributed so much money. For example, Joan Kroc, who was the widow of the founder of McDonald's, she gave NPR $235 million a few years ago. And its budget has increased ever since. So NPR
if they have that much money, why did they need taxpayer money, though? Why can't they just be national public radio that's privately funded? I mean,
Steve, you and you must admit that even as effective as your organization is, if somebody gave you $235 million, you'd take it and start hiring more people.
Of course.
I mean, so they're much bigger than they used to be because liberals have jumped on the bandwagon because they view the government sponsorship of NPR, the original seed money that set up the network, as the good housekeeping seal of approval. In other words,
I see. Yeah.
Well, even if the government didn't give them any money, the fact that it basically was created as a government entity that creates a brand, that creates a attachment, it creates all kinds of associations that benefit NPR.
So they've always been covering kind of crazy stories. They've always had a very liberal bent. Do you think it's worse now than it used to be?
Much worse. I used to appear on NPR. I used to have civil discussions with people on NPR.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
me too.
No more do they want any kind of intellectual diversity. It's all identity politics. Who are you? What group are you from?
What was your
horrific history as a member of that group? How can we have reparations?
Yeah. God. So where do we go from here? I mean, I think people on our side of the aisle who are just a fair-minded people, but also people are conservative as well. There's a lot of outrage here. I think they've done a lot of damage to their reputation.
Well, I think that the key to NPR is this. If people listen to it, they should basically understand that they're listening to
propaganda.
A pretend, polite, right. Civil version of right-wing talk radio, except on the left.
Yes.
And I liked right-wing talk radio, but again, it's not taxpayer-subsidized. NPR pretends to be civil and conveying information. It's really just a bunch of liberal talking points rather than talk radio points.
Well, I'm going to look, I agree with most of that, except that, look, we're a conservative free market, you know, quote, right-leaning radio station, and the show is, but we like to stick to the facts. I mean, they got the facts wrong. It's not just that they're ideological. As you just said, they were wrong on COVID. They were wrong on the Russia collusion story. They were wrong on Hunter Biden. I could go on and on and on. So they're not even, it's propaganda. It's not even any kind of fact-based news.
State broadcasting is what it really is, financed
yeah, exactly.
largely by foundations and partly by the government. I stand corrected.
Yeah. And by the way, John Fund is a longtime political analyst at The Wall Street Journal and wrote for, I think, over two decades there and is an icon and then now writes for National Review and we do. In the last minute that we have, John, just give us a quick 60-second what the heck is going on with this presidential race? It looks to me like a pretty much of a toss up, but how do you read things right at this moment?
Nothing has changed. Everything that the polls show is within the margin of error.
Yep.
The polls have shifted slightly towards Biden. They still show Biden with enormous deficits compared to his 2020 showing among Hispanics and to some extent among Blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is benefiting from the fact that Biden's record is so dismal. However, mm-hmm. the economy is performing decently
yep.
enough that
yep.
Biden is head is above water. The real problem is going to be this. Can Donald Trump convince enough Americans who voted for someone else in 2020
uh-huh.
that he won't be the kind of chaotic
right.
president
right.
who represents constant turmoil that he
yes.
was in his first term? That's going to be the key to the race.
That is a great analysis. That's John Fund. And John, thanks so much for taking some time out of your busy weekend. Folks, we'll be right back. This is the More Money Show on WABC.
It's More Money with leading economist Steve Moore. Now, here's your host, Steve Moore.
Welcome back, folks. This is the More Money Show. I'm economist Steve Moore, and our next guest is an economist extraordinaire who knows more about what is going on with the economy, not just in the United States, but around the world. David Malpass, who served as Donald Trump's pick as the president of the World Bank and did an amazing job, and is now the head of our economic council at the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. He worked many years on Wall Street, and I always learn so much from listening to David Malpass. So, David, thanks so much for joining this afternoon.
Thank you, Steve. That's too kind.
So, a lot to cover. I want to start with the Fed and what they should be doing. And I am not in favor of lowering rates right now. I don't know. Jerome Powell seems to be changing his mind every few weeks about this. But as I look at the recent inflation reports, and I listen to my listeners, by the way, they do not feel like inflation is going away. What is your read on this?
Steve, it's a big problem. The number, you know, the data keeps coming in with inflation being too high, and the Fed has this rule that they're trying to get it down to 2%. Now, where they made that up. And one of the things going wrong, I think, is with for years and years, people thought if you put in higher rates, it would lower the inflation rate. I haven't agreed with that. I think inflation is a monetary phenomenon and also a currency phenomenon and, very importantly, a supply phenomenon.
That's why they call us supply-side economists. Right?
So think if you had more small businesses that had access to finance or some freedom from regulation, they would bring down the prices of stuff.
But
And so the Fed never talks about that. All they say
By the way, can I just interrupt you for a second? Because isn't that – I want to make this very simple for our audience, because they're not economists, and sometimes we economists talk over people's heads. So both Reagan, when Reagan came in, wasn't it true that part of his formula for bringing inflation down was through cutting taxes, reducing regulations, getting more output? And as I learned my economics back in, you know, high school, it was basically, you know, if you increase the supply of something, its price goes down.
Exactly. And that's really powerful because businesses look ahead. They invest when they see a profit. And if the prices are high, they're going to pull them down if they're allowed. But I think we went through that period in the 70s and 80s where it was a little different because the dollar, the gold standard had ended. So you had all this fluctuation in the dollar. Carter put controls on energy. And so the gasoline lines were high. Anyway, where we stand right now is the inflation rate would come down if there were more producers within the economy that could could tackle it. In the meantime, the Fed just keeps the rates high. Now, what does that do? Well, the government is pumping out more money to basically to the upper class who has, you know, it's clipping coupons. And so it's not pulling down, it's not acting on the inflation rate. So they have this, they're kind of steering with this tool that doesn't actually affect the inflation rate. So, it's a little bit hopeless on that. I want them to realize they have other major tools and they're in part responsible for supply. Of course, a bigger part of it is the federal government that's too big and regulatory itself.
So I'm talking to David Malpass, who is the former president of the World Bank, knows more about what's going on in the entire planet on the economy than just about anybody you could possibly talk to. And by the way, David Malpass would be one of my two or three choices, along with Larry Kudlow and Steve Forbes, to be the next Fed chairman. And I know, David, from talking to President Trump, that you are clearly on the short list for that. Well, of course, we first have to get him elected. But I want to go back to this point because I just want to make sure that our listeners understand this, and we can't say it enough. And you said it quite well. The Fed keeps talking. I get so tired of this idea where I keep hearing the Fed saying, oh, we have to slow down the economy. And how is that going to solve inflation? Yeah. David, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, they have this idea that their job is to put brakes on the economy and stop consumers. Well, what does that do? If you do that by raising the rates, yes, it's going to hurt consumers, but it hurts small businesses even more.
Yes.
And so they're just not thinking about it properly. And I think they were saying that even yesterday or today, that they're waiting for the economy to slow down through high rates. Well, that's just not a plan. And so I think it'd be better if they
it is a plan. It's just a bad plan.
Bad plan. Won't work and didn't work. How many? So how many months do you want to wait or years do you want to wait? So a better plan would be people in Washington thinking that the way you get health in the economy is to allow small businesses and much faster growth. You know, they seem satisfied with 2% growth. They say, oh, this is a great economy. Well, for people at the bottom end, 2% is just not enough to allow businesses to stay in business. The bankruptcies are at a record. The lending by banks to small businesses is way down. And so what we're doing is not going to work.
So if you were the Fed chairman right now, or if you were advising Chairman Powell, what would you be advising him to do? Certainly to get off this, idea of the Phillips curve that growth causes inflation. But what positive steps would you like to see the Fed taking right now?
But for a little while, don't talk about rates. Talk about other things within the economy. So Greenspan used to talk about freight car loadings, and people would get bored with it. But that was an indicator of the supply in the economy. Mm-hmm. So just doing that, if Chairman Powell were doing that, that would help. I think he could be talking about excess government spending not being helpful. It's not his job, but on the other hand, he's a really important cog in the overall government. So do that. And then I really think from that the regulatory policy of the Fed, they have a super complicated set of overlays.
Right.
Basically has been ending up causing banks to not want to lend to small businesses because they're too risky. And that can be fixed through, talking about it and then rethinking what your goal, your goal is to have a safe financial system. The Fed has some responsibility for that. But that doesn't mean you can't lend to small businesses. And that's the way it's ended up.
So one of the interesting debates we're having among some of our friends, kind of friendly debate about what's happening with inflation. And as you know, David, I like to look at commodity prices, and those have been rising pretty substantially so far this year. I mean, if you look at the index of, the 25 or so leading commodities, everything from coal to copper to natural gas to wheat and so on, those prices are up 12%, 13%, 14% this year. And that would, that's one of the reasons I had been predicting that this inflation rate wasn't going to go down. And it, of course, it hasn't. Now, I have friends who are friends of yours, too, who basically say, well, look at the money supply. Look at M2, what's called M2. And that actually has slowed down. And so those folks are sort of the more traditional Milton Friedman monetarists who say, all that really matters is the amount of money in the economy. I wonder where you, fit in this debate.
Yeah, I think M2 made more sense when banks were big within the financial system.
By the way, can you define what M2 is?
Yeah, it's checking accounts and savings accounts at banks. So think of the liability side of a commercial bank, whether, a big one, a little one. They have maybe some bonds outstanding, but their big source of their funding is people that put their money in a bank. And that used to be the dominant spot, and you added it up. And if it was growing faster than the economy, you thought too much money chasing too few goods. That really isn't the way the economy works anymore. For one, you've got all the money market funds, which aren't counted in that. But then
the money market funds are not counted as M2?
No, they're in something called M3, which would, And so as money moves from banks to people's money market funds because it's higher yielding, you're going to get a decline in M2 that doesn't really mean anything about the economy. And the second problem is the non-banks. That's private equity. That's all the different forms of finance, even like auto loans that don't come from a bank. Those complicate the issue. So I don't think we can look at M2. Okay. And I think your point is really good that commodities are a pretty good signal of what people think about prices. They typically lead and they will feed into the rest of the economy. So we need to be concerned about gold going up and all the other commodities kind of following them up. That feels like the 1970s. But the distinction I'll make, I think they could come back down if the government allowed production. Think of the damage done by the LNG cutoff, the liquefied natural gas cutoff from Texas. So the U.S. economy by itself has enough strength to lower global energy prices.
Yes.
And that feeds into the price of everything.
So are you saying that the cutoff when Biden sort of cut off the LNG exports, that has actually contributed. Is that one of the reasons we're now paying, you know, in some markets, $3.50 to $4 a gallon at the pump? Because, I mean, it seems like the energy prices have started to rise, you know, especially gas at the pump is higher all over the country now.
Exactly. And natural gas is interchangeable as an energy source with oil and others.
Yep.
So look at the graph. When the day he announced that, oil prices started going up and then gasoline prices start going up. And that feeds in to electricity prices are going up. So the bottom line, though, one could get quite concerned about this if you thought it wasn't correctable. But then I come back to this, that the Fed's regulation of banks, you know, if the Fed is concerned about inflation, they can offset it. Well, let me say the word. Stagflation is a risk here, that we have slow growth for a long time with the inflation being above where the Fed wants it or thinks it should be. And that's what I think gold and commodities are signaling.
So I'm talking to David Malpass, the former president of the World Bank and also a member of the Wall Street fraternity of economists for many, many years, one of the smartest economists I know. David, could you hold on for another quick segment?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, we'll be right back, folks. This is the More Money Show. I'm economist Steve Moore. This is WABC.
This is More Money with economist Steve Moore. Now, Steve Moore.
Welcome back, folks. This is the More Money Show. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend in the springtime. And we have as our guest today, David Malpass, who is an outstanding economist. Every time I talk to him, I feel like I should pay him tuition. I learn so much. So, David, thanks for coming back. I wanted to ask you two quick questions. First, I want to ask you, because I get asked by our listeners this question all the time, the 2% inflation target, I'm basically in favor of that, but I know people have different opinions on it. But what does concern me is when the Fed says, well, maybe it could be 2.5, maybe 3, maybe, you know. So what do you think about that? Should they have a target inflation rate? Should it be 2%? Should it be some of our listeners say it should be 0? I'm against that because I worry, David, that if you target 0 and you go too low, then you have deflation. And I think deflation can even be worse for the economy than inflation. But I'd love your thoughts about that.
Yeah. And 0 or negative, I think, would be distortive and can cause quite a bit of harm. But 2% is somewhat arbitrary. Think of it as a rule of thumb. And so, yeah, they could change it, except think what the signaling would be from that.
Yeah.
That would be that you don't care about it. And so I think they're stuck with 2% for now. My own view is, the Fed is responsible for what we call price stability. And that means that some prices are going down and some are going up at any given time. And so we should look for, I emphasize defending the dollar. If you think 50 years from now, if the dollar is still a good currency, that will have been a success for the central bank. Right now, I worry about it because you see what's happening to gold and to Bitcoin, people looking for these other things to protect them. So the Fed could be more outspoken on it. I'm not wild about CPI because of the measurement errors. And I've written a lot about the core PCE deflator, which is the Fed's measure of inflation. It gets distorted by leading and lagging indicators. So I would rather the Fed was just explicit that we want price stability for the economy. We're going to defend the dollar and we're going to help supply within the economy. They can do all of those things.
So I agree entirely with that. And, I also get asked a lot by our listeners is, you know, are we at risk in America of the dollar losing its global, that we are the global currency? I always say no to that. And David, what I always say to that as well, we're kind of the least rotten apple in the cart. And you know, in times of crisis or international flux, people rush to the dollar. So I'm not so worried about the U.S. losing its global currency's, status. But what say you?
I worry, you know, the British Empire probably went through a phase where they said, well, I'm not worried about losing our empire.
Good point. Right.
So I don't want to be spoiled or arrogant about it. Yes. Right now, the dollar is the world's currency, which is good. But if we fall behind in terms of, for example, settlement time, one of the things in a digital world is I want to know in 3 minutes whether my transaction went through. And that's not happening fast enough. So it creates this space where, you know, where other kinds of money can try to come in. Now, all of that can be fixed, I think, easily by the U.S., the dominant world economic power, by saying we care about the dollar. Which they don't do right now. They should say we're going to defend the dollar and its strength worldwide. And then secondly, we're going to have it be on the forefront of technology in terms of the time taken to settle transactions. They can do both of those. In the meantime, though, we're at risk. You know, China's looking for market share for its currency, and other things are as well, commodity-based things, whatever it might be. So take it seriously, but there's no reason why we can't preserve the dollar.
Yeah, I think especially if Donald Trump is elected and we get good economic policies. So we've only got a few minutes left, and, you know, this is a show where we try to we call it more money because we want to make more money for our investor friends and listeners. So just in the last few minutes we have left, I'm just going to ask you a quick question about what's going on in the world economy, because after all, you were the head of the World Bank and know so much about what's going on in every corner of the globe. So just very quickly, what are the two or three countries you're bullish on right now?
Oh, those are always hard. Well, I think you have to say the U.S. and China. China just reported their GDP numbers this morning. Now, you can criticize them, but that's true of all economic data. You can criticize.
Yeah, sure.
The reality is they're a pretty productive economy, and their currency they are defending their currency, and so that gives them some strength. They cheat on a lot of areas, so we have to push back and find stronger ways to stand up to that.
Okay. That's David Malpass. This is the WABC More Money Show. I just wanted to make a few closing comments on the show this afternoon. And by the way, thank you so much for listening in. We're excited about in the weeks ahead, perhaps expanding to 2 hours. So that will give us more time for more guests and more discussion. But I just wanted to mention a few things that happened this week and get your reaction to it. You heard about what happened at NPR, National Public Radio, and how they, you know, they're all just a bunch of left-wing liberals, and they admit it, and they are not covering real stories. They are not constrained by the truth. You cannot believe a single word that the people at National Public Radio says. You probably wouldn't be listening to this show if you were listening to NPR, but I'm going to tell you, folks, it is not honest. It is not unbiased, and the fact that, some 80 of the major reporters in the Washington Bureau, every one of them was a Democratic registered voter, and not one was a Republican. Now, wait a minute. I thought the left believed in diversity and tolerance. They don't tolerate. This is the new left in America. They've been preaching tolerance for 30 years, and they are the most intolerant people on the planet. Anyone with a viewpoint that's at all slightly different from theirs is not tolerated. That's the opposite, folks, of tolerance. So that is an amazing story that I think just turn it off. And we as taxpayers have got to revolt against our tax dollars being spent. I mean, look, I don't think tax dollars should subsidize this show, right? I mean, it should be paid for the way everything is paid for, through people voluntarily contributing money or through the advertising. And that's how we're paid for. And nobody is forced to pay for this, and no one's forced to listen to it. But I got to tell you, NPR is the opposite model. And in the 40 years that I've been in this business, I would say today, National Public Radio, NPR, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting are more left wing than they ever have been before. Two other quick issues I wanted to mention to you on the way out. One is just, this is so amazing. Did you know last week, finally, the Biden administration finally terminated their mask mandates from COVID. Think about this. Biden has been in office for, I don't know, 1,100 days or something like that, maybe 1,200. I don't know the exact number, but well over 1,000 days. And the COVID was basically over when he came into office. And now he's finally terminating the mask mandates. I mean, that's comical. That's laughable. These people just want to control our lives. And there was never a reason, except for maybe for the first couple of months of COVID, to require people to wear masks. And so isn't it amazing that they finally said, okay, you don't have to wear masks anymore. Now that had to do with certain kinds of workers and so on, but still, given the fact that the pandemic ended at least 3 years ago, it seems absurd to me that we, and by the way, I wasn't actually in favor of the mask mandates in the first place. Finally, school choice. You all know this is the most important movement in America today to me. We cannot go forward another day with a school system that is rotten and corrupt and does not teach our kids. Our public school system today, with some exceptions, but especially in the inner cities and especially the lower income Americans, it's child abuse what's happening. They're not learning anything. And you have whole school districts and whole schools where nobody can read or write or do math at grade level proficiency. It brings tears to your eyes. I mean, why are we subjecting our kids to these awful schools and teachers that can't teach? And by the way, I love teachers. I think about when I was in grade school and high school, and I think about I was really fortunate. I went to some great schools. They were public schools back then too. And I remember some of the great teachers I had that had inspired me so much. They loved what they were doing and they loved their subjects. I've become such a fan of history because I had so many inspiring history teachers who loved to teach it. They loved teaching American history. We don't have that so much anymore. And by the way, there are great teachers out there. And I've said this 1,000 times. A great teacher is worth their weight in gold. The problem is in our public school system, you can't get rid of the bad teachers. You know, it would be like putting, you know, 9 guys on a baseball team and you don't know who the good team players are or not. And therefore you don't choose. You just let everybody play. I think this is an outrageous thing. I think we have to let every parent in America, this is my message today, folks, every single parent in America and every single school child should have a choice of where they send their kids to school, whether it's a Catholic school, a Jewish school, a Montessori school, a trade school, a public school, a charter school. When you have more choices and you have more competition, things work out. When you have a monopoly like we have with our public school system, you get really terrible results. So let's make this a mission that we will all work for our children to have the best schools in the world. Because today our schools are rotten, and even a new poll of teachers found that the schools are worse today than ever before. That's intolerable. That's my message for today, folks. Have a great, great weekend. You've been listening to The More Money Show on WABC.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Hey, we're back. It's Ryan Payne, Bob Payne, after a little hiatus from Payne Capital Management. Of course, that's PAYNE, talking the markets, the economy, and man, oh man, Bob, a lot going on. We've had a little sell-off in the market, a lot of concern about interest rates, inflation, oil prices. Bob, is it apocalypse now? I need to know.
So we have basically 5 months straight up, right? The end of last 2 months of last year and the first 3 months of this year. And then we get a sell-off, which is not unexpected, right? You know, we get the volatility can strike at any time, helps out warning for no reason, at least it seems, because, you know, a lot of the things that they're focused on the headlines were in the headlines when the market was going up.
Yeah, right. It's not new news. Well, I think the one surprise is the Federal Reserve, we were anticipating we're going to cut rates at 1.7 times this year. Now it's highly likely we'll only be 1 or 2 times this year. And, you know, I think the concern around that is rates going to be too high for too long? Is that going to put the economy into recession? You know, we know inflation has been very stubborn here. And is inflation going to just outpace wages like it did in the 70s? And we're just going to go into this cataclysmic decline, recession. And I think, you know, that's probably what's on investors' minds right now. And especially if you're investing your portfolio for retirement, it's like, are you positioned correctly? But I think that's where the worry is.
Well, I don't know why people are worried about that. I'm ecstatic about that. I would love to have higher for longer. You know, my generation, the baby boomers, we're retiring. There's 10,000 of us retiring every single day. And, you know, we need income. So, you know, you got to have income coming in. And the best place to do that is in the bond market, at least the most secure place to do it, where you know at least what your downside risk is, you know, all your money back with income. So, you know, the fact that the rates are not being cut right now by the Federal Reserve, you know, kind of ignores the fact, right, that rates are where they've been for the last 40, 50 years. And we've had some substantial bull markets with rates exactly where they are right now.
No, it's a good point. But I think, you know, to your point, too, when it comes to retirement and income, like now is the time to capitalize on that, because let's face it, the Fed could cut interest rates this year and those money market funds paying 5%. You know, we said this last year, it looks so attractive, but if inflation is 3%, you're paying taxes on that money market fund. All of a sudden your 5% is like a 0% return. Meanwhile, Bob, to your point, you can start locking in to some longer term rates here. And if you look at dividends on portfolios right now, if you're building income for retirement, we're seeing some of the most attractive dividends or cash flow that we've seen in a very long time. And investors are ignoring that. You know, they're buying a lot of what we would call those growth stocks that pay no dividends, but you need dividends for retirement. You need cash flow in retirement. Most of your portfolios aren't set up that way. And that's a big problem right now.
Well, it is a big problem, right? Because you can't buy lunch with relative performance, right? It's like, oh my goodness, my semiconductor stock went up dramatically in the last 5 months. But you know, you can't buy a hamburger with that, right? You have to sell stock, pay capital gains. And there's nothing wrong with having growth stocks in your portfolio, by the way. We have them in ours. But you need that, you know, repeatable, sustainable income. You know, there's some really great companies out there now that have been paying dividends, not for a few years, but for 50, 60, 70 years. And not only paying a dividend, but increasing that dividend every single year. I mean, that's a really good track record because, you know, the economy ebbs and flows, right? You know, we have different cycles happen. And if you own a portfolio of stocks that not only pay a dividend, but increase the dividend, it's a great way to overcome inflation.
Yeah, and I think that's the name of the game right now because inflation is more stubborn than a lot anticipated, right? It may not go back to the 2% that the Federal Reserve would like. So you have to ask yourself, with cost of living going up, you know, am I making the right decisions right now to grow my money over inflation? And I think that's where a lot of mistakes are being made. Because, you know, I kind of agree with the fact that inflation could stay stubborn here. You know, rents aren't coming down. Everyone knows what healthcare costs look like. If you looked at the premiums on your insurance recently, they've skyrocketed. And you really need to account for that when it comes to retirement because costs are going up. They're going up at a much higher rate than they did the last decade. And I would argue most of you aren't accounting for that in your portfolio. Your costs are going to double over the next 20 years. Are you making that assumption when you're figuring out your income plan? And I would say most of you probably aren't doing that.
You know, that's a really good point, Rye. Things are very expensive, right? They've gotten more expensive. And I know everybody keeps talking about the Federal Reserve is doing a great job because inflation is going up slower than it was 2 years ago. But, you know, tell that to somebody who's paying a higher price for gas than they were 2 years ago or paying for food more than they were just 2 years ago. But you know what's really more expensive is waiting for the right opportunity to get positioned, you know, to be in a position to not have to worry about these things. I mean, the stock market's gone up 10,000 points, right? Since the bottom just 2 years ago, while interest rates were going up. If you're waiting for the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates, you just missed a gigantic move, but it's not too late, you know, because the economy's still growing. Earnings are still growing. Stocks and bonds are going to be the place to be right now.
Well, I think a big concern is it too late? Is the market overheated? And the question is what market, right? Yep. So depending on the portfolio that you have right now, you know, if you look at earnings this year, they should be very, very good. In fact, double digit earnings growth this year, which means markets follow earnings and earnings do look good. If you look at the actual economic growth in the economy, well, it's tracking very good in the first quarter this year. So I think the odds of the recession that we heard about for 2 years are probably pretty low given the fact that the employment market's strong. If you look at retail sales, people are actually spending money, albeit probably a lot of cases on things they don't want to be spending on money because prices have gone up. You can't discount that. But you know, you do have an economy where people are working, people are making more money, inflation is still moderating. That theme hasn't gone away. as you like to say, Bob, the world doesn't end very often. So you have to embrace that as you build your portfolio for retirement. And we're seeing it right now. There's a lot of inertia out there. There's a lot of fear. Well, you can't put your head in the sand right now. The opportunity is now to make sure that you're set up for retirement. Don't wait on it. You're going to miss the boat again if you have been.
I absolutely believe that, Ry. You know, because generally speaking, let's face it, down periods in the economy, bear markets, they don't start when the headlines are telling you to be alert for them, right? When everybody's looking for the bear market to start, that's not when it's going to start, right? Black swan events or whatever occur because black swans are very, very unusual. So the key is, you know, you've got to focus on the fact that things are good, right? That just recently the IMF just raised global GDP growth by, you know, from 3.1% to 3.2%, right? And what did most economists and most investors say? Oh, big deal. What do you mean big deal, right? When you have sentiment this negative, when, you know, expectations are so low, you can't afford to wait. You've got to be invested. You've got to take advantage of the opportunities before they're gone.
Yeah. And if you're thinking to yourself right now, okay, I get it. Bob Ryan, I haven't heard you for a couple of weeks. I missed you. We need that optimism. I need to know which way to go. Well, here's your shot to get that second opinion. Make sure your retirement's on track, that you do have the right portfolio to live off your money over the rest of your life. We're going to keep 10 slots open for the rest of the show. If you saved over $1 million for your retirement, Bob and I will run for you our total financial master plan, and we'll do that with no obligation or cost. It's a full holistic review. We literally look at everything. There's not a firm out there that will do this work up front. We go as far as building you your own personalized financial portal. We give you a bird's eye view of your entire financial life, and we're just going to hone in on every financial issue you need to address today, whether it's that income plan for retirement. You need income to live on. How are you going to draw from your portfolio? How are you going to take Social Security? How are you going to factor in inflation? We're going to put together a full dynamic income plan so you don't run out of money. We're going to look at diversification. Markets have been all over the place for the last couple months, going up and down. Has your portfolio been like a yo-yo too? Or have you been sitting in cash? Paralysis by analysis, can't figure out what to do. We're going to put together a full investment game plan. We're going to tie it to your goals. We're going to show you how to grow your wealth, but most importantly, protect it over the rest of your life. And we're going to look at fees and taxes. Wall Street loves to sell you those high-cost, tax-inefficient products, whether it's an annuity, insurance product, brokerage product, mutual funds, structured products. We do a deep dive of every single investment you own. We show you where all the hidden costs are. We show you how to reduce that cost and optimize your portfolio for taxes. It's not what you make, what you take. You'll get our full tax playbook. We literally keep 10 slots open for the whole show if you saved over $1 million for your retirement.
All you have to do is text or call 844-752-6692. That's 844-752-6692. Or just simply call 844-PLAN-NYC. That's 844-PLAN-NYC. If you're one of our next 10 callers, you've saved over $1 million for your retirement. Our team of financial advisors and certified financial planners will help you to create your own personal total financial master plan. Now, there's no obligation, there's no cost, there's no strings attached, but you won't have a plan if you're not one of our next 10 callers. So text or call right now, 844-752-6692. That's 844-752-6692, or just simply call 844-PLAN-NYC. That's 844-PLAN-NYC.